Blog Talk Radio.
Today is Friday, October 9, 2014, and this is Foxology Today. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Happy Friday, folks. Happy weekend. I hope you have a few fun things planned on your calendar for the weekend, a little downtime maybe, a little time for yourself, a little time for some enjoyment perhaps. Yeah, sound good? I hope so. Because relaxation, oh, I just love the word, is such a great thing. Taking time to slow things down, exit from the rush and the hustle and the bustle we're always a part of. Sometimes you even just have to escape it all, escape the routines of the home front even, change gears, leave the tasks for a while and just chill, as they say. Well, I can hear you saying, oh, but there's still so much to do and so little time to do it. Well, I tell you this, promise you this. If you take half a day maybe or an evening or a few hours to enjoy something that's fun or peaceful, enjoyable for yourself, you are going to feel renewed, revitalized, and refreshed. Yes, you will. And all that stuff that you put on hold to do that will be right there waiting for you when you get back. The difference is, though, that you're going to feel a new sense of energy about approaching it after you get that brief getaway. Don't knock it till you try it. Well, all of that sounds really good, doesn't it? Yes. Well, indeed. Yeah, it does. If you're getting away to do something so rewarding. But what if you are planning to get away because you have to escape from a routine of fear and terror and violence? My guest today is Lisa, and we have changed her name for protection and for her anonymity. Lisa is a survivor of domestic violence, and she feels like she's fortunate to be alive and able to discuss her story with us in this topic today. We are going to learn more about Lisa, hear her story, learn how she was able to break free from her violator and the cycle of violence. Welcome, Lisa.
Good morning, Silver.
How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. I feel so honored.
Well, I do too. I know that this is a very sensitive topic and issue, and I know sometimes when guests have to talk about this, it's not always easy, so I appreciate that you are willing to share. Our goal, of course, is always to bring more awareness. It's Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and so we want to shed more light on it, and people like you who were brave enough, courageous enough to find your way to the other side of that situation. So I do appreciate it very much. So
well,
why don't we
I just
this?
Have to say that we appreciate you for having the courage too to bring this out in the open and just the thoughtfulness that women and other people in society need to talk about this openly and stop hiding the secrets and fueling that that shame that so many women feel because they don't feel that they're free to talk about it. So thank you so much for opening up the platform for this kind of discussion.
I thank you for saying that because well, thank you. We know that it is with purpose, and we know that it is going to help. Let's start with this. Let's go back, Lisa, and take a look at when all of this started to happen in your life. When did the abuse actually begin in your life?
Well, that is something that I have had time to reflect on and try to do a little self-analysis, and I've gotten professional help to just sort out how and why that I end up in those kind of circumstances, because it actually happened to me more than once in my life. I was in relationships with men that mistreated me, abused me, violated me. I really like the way that you termed it when you said violators. That's something I really don't think a lot about. I just think of the horror and the pain, but it is a violation.
Absolutely.
I believe it began before I can really pinpoint, because I think that as a child I probably was subjected to some psychological abuse, and I think that kind of set me in that direction because of my own sense of self-worth. And I ended up getting married at a very young age. At 17 years old, I was married, and I really just was looking for love, you know. And I got married. I was already with child when I got married, and I wanted to provide my child with a sense of security. So I married my childhood sweetheart, and soon after we got married, the physical abuse started. The attacks. I actually gave birth to my first child soon after I got married, just a few months actually. And during my recuperation from having my first child, that was my first a physical attack from my husband. And I was just utterly shocked. I could not believe this was happening to me. Because if anybody's been in the honeymoon stage, you know how you think everything is just wonderful and it will always be that way. And you just see the world through rose-colored glasses and through Ozzie and Harriet. But I just thought, you know, how could this be happening to me? I challenged my husband that I wasn't supposed to have sex, and it was and it became an all-out brawl, because I had just given birth and I didn't want to have sex, and that was something that he didn't want to wait on. He didn't want to wait the 6 weeks, and I wanted to, because that's what my doctor told me I should do. So it escalated, and we were actually pulling the baby up from, you know, trying to struggle with the baby, and he was going to take the child from me, the fight, you know. If you've ever been in one of these kind of altercations, people listening, you don't even remember how it started sometimes, but it just led to a physical fight. And before I knew it, I was on the floor, and he physically kicked me in my vagina. And so I ended up being able to get to the phone and call the police, and the police came. And he said the funniest thing I never forgot. I never forgot what he said. He said, "I didn't kick you. I just pushed you with my foot." I said, "Okay, what's a kick?" So at any rate, that was the beginning. I ended up staying married, though, for close to 10 years, and it didn't really get much better. There were periods where it got better, but, yep, I got married at 17, and I was determined to make it work, because so many people said, you get married that young, it's not going to work. And that was one reason I stayed in it, too, because I wanted to prove everyone wrong.
Yes. Well, Lisa, I I'm so sorry to hear how deeply challenging that was, and I was visualizing much of what you said, and I want to ask you this question. When this first episode of violence showed itself, when you look back now, do you see anything in the violators, your husband's character, that may have been signaling anything to you at all, but perhaps you ignored it? Can you share that? And I'm asking that question because, yes, I'd like to have an answer, but also for women who may be in similar circumstances, but just maybe see instances of anger or verbal abuse as something that just is a part of what goes on from day to day. What would you say about that now as you look back?
Well, honestly, at 17 years old, I was very naive. And like I said, I saw romance and the world through rose-colored glasses. Everything that I had imagined what romance was, I made it my reality. And in general, I really still to this day think he was a good man, a good person. And the only indication that I really got was the drug use and the alcohol abuse. When he would drink or use any kind of substance, that's when I would see this other character come out that was a little bit scary. And as long as I didn't do anything that hampered his choices on what he wanted to do, then all was peace and everything was good. But me being who I am, I felt, you know, that was a long time ago, and I felt that, you know, I'm liberated and I am woman, hear me roar, and I'm not going to take it, you know. And so I would open my mouth and that's when the fight would start. But I was thought, well, if you love me, don't you care how I feel, you know. But it was the drugs and the alcohol that really, I think, was the thing that gave me a clue that my well-being could be jeopardized.
Mm-hmm. I heard you say something in what – yes, of course. I heard you just say something that lends itself to something that's kind of controversial, and that is taking responsibility for some of the provocation in these incidences. Can you speak to that?
That is very, very relevant because I say that because I do feel that women do have a voice, and that when you're in a loving, healthy relationship, there should be equal regard for each other's opinions and thoughts and feelings at all times, whatever the issue is. However, there's a way to say things and to do things, and I learned that near the end of the cycle of abuse in my life. I feel it's the end. I haven't been in an abusive relationship in many years, but I did go from one to another for a while. And after I decided that I wanted to heal and I found ways of healing, I was able to look at myself and my part in it and what I did that I could have done different that maybe had different outcomes. And I think that is important that you do highlight that today, because one of the things that I did, I believe, that made my situation worse in every instance that I was in those situations, whoever my violator was, I would be afraid. And what I've discovered is that men and women too, excuse me, I'm probably getting choked up, but violators prey on weaker vessels, weaker women, or weaker men. And I think that by me immediately going into that fear mode and reacting in fear and not thinking through and not, you know, handling myself in a way that was more grounded in the faith that I claim to have in God, I also contributed to the situation because my reactions, you know, and I'll try to think of something specific. I don't know how to describe it because, you know, actually I don't spend a lot of time thinking back on those horrible days because I feel that being a victim of abuse in an abusive relationship is like being under a terror threat constantly. And I'm just not there anymore. But I just remember freezing and doing things that, you know, like cussing him out, you know, just reacting the same way that he was. But near the end, I discovered when I was not intimidated by them, and I read that in the Bible in 1 Peter 3, do not be intimidated by them and don't be afraid. And I decided I was going to actually do that. And then at that point, my violator didn't know what to do. And he didn't continue his attack and his assault on me. I was actually like, I felt the presence of the Lord because all I did was just stand on faith and instead of reacting in fear, if that makes sense. I hope somebody understands that.
Yes, I do. What was it that signaled that in you? Had you just grown weary of dealing with the situation as it was? And I hear the decisions that you said that you made as far as your ability and your own confidence in handling this. Making yourself better was what I really think I heard you say. You wanted to be better, mm-hmm. and you knew that that would take a different set of skill sets and tools to do that. Was it at that time also that you had made the decision to never step that way again into that type of relationship or to recognize it? What does that look like or feel like when you do that?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I really appreciate the way you presented that. You said it much more eloquently than I tried to express it, but it all started when I questioned, why is it some women are not abused? Why is it that some women don't go through this? And I decided to start observing them, and I noticed that they were not afraid. They would stand up to anyone that threatened them or threatened their children. Well-being, and that was a big part of what drove me too to get a escape relationship, is that I would do anything to protect my children. Once I realized that I had put myself and them in a dangerous situation, once my eyes opened, and I give God the glory for that, for opening my eyes, and people that, you know, cared about me were praying for me, because I'm telling you, I wasn't making good choices. I too began to use and abuse drugs and in an attempt to escape. But once I got free of the trap of drug addiction, I started to heal and to find ways to stay off of them. And as part of that, you try to learn about, as I tried to learn about myself as to what caused me to make these choices. And I started observing women that didn't take that from men or women or anybody. And I decided it was about not being afraid. And also I learned to forgive myself. I think that because I hadn't really valued myself, and that was the other key. Really loving myself after getting free from the delusion that being a drug addict kept me in. I was able to see a lot of things, and I saw that I didn't love myself and value myself. So once I started to value who I am, Lisa and embrace Lisa and instead of just doing things to try to take care of my children or take care of my abuser or please my audience, I just wanted to please myself. And at that point, I was able to know the difference between what a real love and real affection look like and act like. I hope I'm addressing the question. I'm kind of strange.
No, you're doing a great job. You're doing a great job. I want to ask you this because we definitely don't want to wrap up the show without talking to people who may be in the mix of these circumstances. And I say people because there is the victim, there's the violator, but then there's children, like you say, and then there's parents and sisters and brothers and other people who may even be aware, maybe not, but when we talk about domestic violence awareness, that's what we want to do. We want to make people look at this more closely so that we can break those cycles. And when we hear your story, Lisa, and all of the complexities and the fact that you were able to come out on the other side so victoriously, we know it can be done. So here's what I want to ask you to reflect on now. I know that you know recently there's been lots of stuff in the news with high-profile people who have been accused of and we've seen as violators. And it heightened greatly. It brought focus and spotlight to this issue. And as I just took a perspective on it, I thought, well, we know it's deeper. I had a guest on a couple of weeks ago who said less than 10% of cases get reported. So we know that even though there was this big deal about all of it, still there are so many women who are suffering in silent pain and will, if they don't make some of the same decisions that you did, they will for years and years. And so what I would like to have you reflect on is perhaps the understanding that you know what they may be experiencing and encouragement or even advice that you might have for family members and for the victim, perhaps even for the violator.
Well, what I would say, if given the opportunity that I'm given right now, the main thing that I would want to emphasize is that you need to realize that you are worth a lot more than the way that your violator is treating you, that treatment does not really say what you are really worth. And when you're in those situations, I know for myself, and I've worked with other women who have been in abusive relationships, that you begin to get brainwashed and believe all those mean things and negative things that your violator says to you, and you start to believe it, and you start to feel so much shame for being who you are, because they make you feel that you are who they say you are. They make you feel that no one else would want you. They make you feel worthless and that you don't have a choice. They make you feel that they will kill you. I've recently heard a statistic that 75% of the abused women that are murdered after they leave their violator. But don't let that stop you, because once you take charge of your life and you have to make decisions like I did, even if you have to leave the vicinity, the area where your violator is, don't be afraid, because it's that fear that gives them power. Don't be afraid, because if those women that did lose their lives had left sooner, they would probably be still alive. Every time I see a story of a victim that lost their lives to the hands of their abuser who had abused them, whether it was a week, a month, or years. I say, that could be me if I hadn't left. And I just want to urge you, encourage you to get the strength, use the faith you have. It only takes a little bit of faith to just trust in a power greater than you. Trust in God and trust yourself to love yourself. You know that you are much more valuable than they say. Even all the things that I would hear from my abusers, I knew they were a lie, and I would say to myself, they're wrong. They're wrong, and you just have to muster up the strength and the courage and the faith to walk away. Seek safety. Seek shelter. Seek support. You can't do it by yourself. Don't even try. Seek the mechanisms that are available to you, and you will get the support you need. And I just urge you to do it as soon as possible. You don't know what's ahead. If your situation is anything like the abusive relationships I was in, you don't know how they're going to come home, whether they're going to come home in good spirits or if they're going to just start a fight out of nothing. So my strongest encouragement would be to leave the situation. And if you, and I know that you love them. I know how it feels to love them. I still love some of the men that I was abused by. I said, my love was real, but I had to learn to love myself more. And that's what you have to do. If you hear my voice, just know that you are worthy to be loved. And just do that. That love will make you do the right thing. You got to love yourself more. Because even the Bible says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. So love yourself. Because you can't give what you don't have. And you got to have that love for yourself.
Yes.
I hope I answered your question, Sylvia.
Yes. Lisa, thank you so much. And I just want to add that if there are any family members or friends or violators who may be looking for help, please call the domestic violence hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE. 1-800-799-SAFE. Lisa, thank you. Your story has been compassionate and compelling, and I really thank you for being so open and so candid about sharing. And I have no doubt, based on everything that I've heard today, that you are going to be very instrumental, not just through this radio program, but other things that you do to help women find their way to a safer place in life. Thank you so much.
Well, you're so welcome, and I just can say likewise, because without women like you and putting things out there on the forefront for people to see, then, you know, we wouldn't have this platform that we can talk about these things. Thank you for everything that you're doing, for your Bells program that you're setting up for the gifts for the holidays. I look forward to being able to be involved in that and everything.
And
that
I just
want to
mention, and I want to mention too, that you are also a contributor, that you have made it a commitment also to sharing that gift. So I thank you for that. And I want to thank you, listeners, too. I think this story is enough to offer us all more additional insight on the importance of continuing to shed light on domestic violence. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I want to wish you a great day and hope you'll tune in the next couple of weeks. I'll have Sandy Atheon with me, and we'll be talking about the nature of relationships and what healthy ones look like. So I hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, thank you so much again, and have an amazing day.